Welcome to the Shir and Targumim, Parshas Vayishlach. We left off yesterday with Yaakov Avinu struggling with the individual, the Ish, the mysterious person who comes and appears to him. And again, I think many of us are familiar with that which Rashi mentions in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Hei, at the end of Rashi, Vayeyavek Ish, a person struggled with Yaakov Avinu. Rashi brings, U'pirshu Rabbeinu Zichrono Livracha, Chazal tell us, Shehu Saro Shel Esav, that the individual who was wrestling with Yaakov Avinu was not a flesh and blood person, he was a malach. And what kind of malach, what kind of angel was he? He was the malach who represented Esav. Every nation has a malach, you know, that somehow was assigned to that nation. So this was the malach assigned to Esav, who was struggling with Yaakov Avinu, and what's represented by that struggle is the eternal struggle between Esav and Yaakov, which is predicted at the very beginning of Parashas Toldos. It's interesting to note that the Targum Yonason ben Uziel brings a different understanding of who this ish, who this individual was. It's a little bit of a lesser known understanding from Chazal. But this approach of the that's recorded in the Yonasan ben Uziel ultimately comes from the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer. Again, as we've pointed out in the past, one of the earlier midrashim that we have. I think it's the earliest midrash that we have. And as we've seen already, the Yonasan ben Uziel frequently brings ideas and midrashim that are found in the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer. So here on Pasuk Chaf Hei, we read as follows: Vishtar Yaakov b'lechudoi me'ivro yiluyovka. Yaakov Avinu was left alone on the other side of the Abok, of the river. V'is katash malacha imei b'dumus gvar. And a malach that was in the form of a person, is katash, began striking Yaakov Avinu. It's interesting, we saw that the word vayeyovek, which is in the Pasuk, which usually means to struggle, was translated by Targum Onkelos in an unusual way. The Targum Onkelos translates the word vayeyovek as v'ishtadal, which again, as we pointed out yesterday, literally means he enticed or sought to seduce Yaakov Avinu. Here, in the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, the term is not understood as seducing or enticing, it's pulvering. You know, v'is katash. The malach, dressed up as a man, began to pummel Yaakov Avinu. And what did he say? The Omar, the Malach, spoke to Yaakov Avinu. He told him the following: Halo Omar tla asara kol diloch. You know, when you left Eretz Yisrael to go to Haran, you said that you were going to take off Maiser. You're going to take off a tenth from everything that you have. Uchol asher titeng li aser asrenu loch. That was the pasuk. We have it in writing. It's in the Chumash. Vo islach treser benin. Uvrato chado, while you were in Haran, you had 12 children. It's interesting. It's not exactly accurate, right? In other words, at this point, Binyamin hasn't been born yet, so, you know, there are really 11 children. Okay, but, you know, you have a lot of kids, and you have one daughter. V'lo asar tonon, and you haven't taken off Maiser from the kids. What do you mean, you haven't taken off Maiser from the kids? I understand how to take off Maiser from fruit. I understand how to take off Maiser from animals. How do you take off Maiser from human children? I mean, how does that work exactly? So let's see how it plays out. But the Malach comes to Yaakov Avinu with a taino. He says, you know, you made a promise to the Ribono Shel Olam, and you didn't live up to the promise. I mean, here it is, 20 years later. And we have yet to see that you fulfill this promise about taking off Maiser as it comes to the most important thing in your life, all of these children that you were blessed with. Miad afresh arba buchrin la arba'a imahasa. So Yaakov Avinu right away said, okay, let me do the following. I have 12 kids, 12 sons. Again, right now he doesn't have Binyamin, but apparently, again, he knows, as we've talked about before, he knows Binavuah. He knows prophetically that he's going to have 12 sons by the time all of this is over. So, you know, he's making a calculation based on the 12 sons. So he says, okay, 12 sons. I'm going to take the four b'choros, the four firstborn, out of the equation. Right? There are four firstborn to their respective mothers. Right? There's Reuven, there's Yosef, there's Dan, and there's God. Right? So those four I'm putting on the side because as a b'chor, as a firstborn, they already have a certain amount of kedusha, and I don't want to use up one of them in terms of the Meiser. V'ishtaru t'manya, right? So there were eight boys now left after he took out from the calculation the four firstborn. Utna l'mimne mishimon. So he started counting the eight who were left from Shimon. Now, if you count to ten, if you count eight things going to ten, that means that you finish and you go back to the beginning. Right? So in other words, if you start counting from Shimon, you count down what you have till you get to 10. So you're going to count down the 8. And then Shimon will be 9. And then Levi will be 10. Right? In other words, you wrap around and you start counting again. Usleik Levi b'masra. So Levi came out to be the 10th of Yaakov Avinu's sons using that calculation. So Yaakov Avinu said, fine, I'm going to separate Levi and make him my Meiser. I'm going to make him my tithe. Now, what does it mean to make Levi your tithe? For that matter, what does it mean to make any of your children your tithe? I mean, the truth is, in American law, kids are tax deductible, but I'm not sure that that's exactly what the Yonasan Ben Uziel is getting at. Basically, as we know, Levi is set aside to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. His shevet, his tribe, doesn't have a nachala, a portion in Eretz Yisrael. He's kulo kadosh. In other words, Levi and his descendants are set aside for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So in a certain sense, that's meiser, right? It's not meiser in quite the same way that your fruit is meiser, that your animal is meiser, or something like that. But, you know, Levi and his descendants are going to be meiser in the sense that they are dedicated to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel understands that that is a necessary component of the fulfillment of Yaakov Avinu's vow. He says, "B'chol asher titein li aser asrenu lach, whatever you give me, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'll give you back a tenth." Great! Take a tenth of your children and dedicate them to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what you should have been doing. And the fact that you haven't taken any steps in that direction, I mean, what would it mean to take steps in that direction at this point in time? I don't think anything practical. I mean, there's no Beis HaMikdash for him to serve in. Nobody at this point has a nachalo, has an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. So to say that Levi will forego his inheritance in order to serve Hashem, I'm not even sure what that means at this point in time. But you, Yaakov Avinu, should have expressed that. In other words, you should have said that you were going to set aside one of your kids and his descendants to be dedicated to Hashem. So comes this Malach and starts, you know, beating up Yaakov Avinu and said, what happened to your promise? Yeah? You're just promised and you don't fulfill your promises. Bang, 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 bang. That's all of this, you know, this fighting that's going on. Not to do with Esav. Yeah.
But later on, we see that the Levium are switched for the Bechorim.
Right, right. So the question is, how does this relate to the notion that the Avoda was originally given to the Bechoros, you know, to the firstborn, and the Levium are sort of a substitute, you know, for the Bechoros? It sounds like originally Shevet Levi wasn't going to have any particular, you know, any special quality to it. So it could be that this Yonasan Ben Uziel, again, who's reflecting the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer, maybe is working along some lines that are similar to a Maharal that we've quoted a number of times. The Maharal in Gur Aryeh, we've seen, quotes, has the following question. The Levim and the Becharos are only switched after the Cheto Ega. And yet, in Parshas Tetzaveh, which comes one parsha before the Cheto Egel, we find this whole description of the Kohanim and what they're supposed to be wearing. I don't understand. Up until Parshas Kisisa, there was no concept of Kohanim, right? I mean, it was all Bechoros. So how could there be a concept of Big Day Kahuna and what the Kohanim are wearing if the whole idea of Kohanim and Levium only becomes significant in Parshas Kisiso. So the Maral answers, the idea was always for there to be Kohanim from Shevet Levi. It was just that the role of the Leviim was meant to be fulfilled by the Becharos, by the firstborn, and it was that role which was switched. But the special notion of Kohanim coming from Levi, that was always going to be there. So maybe that's what's meant over here as well, something along these lines. Maybe not all of Shevet Levi, but at least part of Shevet Levi, the Kohanim, there was this notion that Shevet Levi would be set aside, you know, in some way or another to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu alongside the Bechoros in some way. Something like that seems to be what he's assuming.
Why did he count four Bechoros? He only counted one.
Well, it depends how you look at it. I mean, there's a Bechor Min Ha'av and there's a Bechor Min Ha'aim. I mean, the truth is, in terms of Pidyon HaBen, you know, it's the Bechor Min Ha'aim who's significant. So he didn't want to use, you know...
For
Yerusha's Min Ha'av, right.
And it's only one, but he has to be married twice.
Right.
One
right, but again, in terms of Kedusha, so in other words, Pidyon HaBen is a function of Kedusha, so you're not supposed to double dip with Kedusha, so all of the four Becharos that he had, Min Ha'aim, already have Kedusha, so he's looking for yet another child who's going to have a special kind of Kedusha. Right. Right, no, that's the Cheshbon. Whatever, I mean, I guess as he's getting punched, he's like, what, you know, just tell me what I'm supposed to do, you know, stop punching me already, you know. So, Ane Michael. So all of a sudden, there's an appearance of another Malach, says the Yonasan Ben Uziel, and that's Michael. Michael, we know, is typically involved in representing the Jewish people. Ana Michael ve'omer. So all of a sudden, Michael, the Malach, appears, and he says, Ribonei da'alma, Ribono shalolam, Dein hu adbach, this is your portion, meaning Levi, that Yaakov Avinu has just set aside, this is your portion, leave the poor guy alone already, right? Stop him from getting beaten up. V'al esek piskamaya ho'ilein, so, and because of all of this stuff that was going on, ishtoi min halenachla, so Yaakov Avinu was delayed on the other side of the river, ad misak amuna kritzta, until the dawn rose in the morning. Right? So again, according to this interpretation of the Perek of the Rebbe Lezer, the Yonasan Ben Uziel, the Malach, it is a Malach, but the Malach has nothing to do with Esav. The Malach is basically, you know, representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. He's, you know, he's the IRS guy who sent from the Ribono Shel Olam's office, and he's doing an audit. And he says, you know, Yaakov Avinu, 20 years ago, you promised to give something to the Ribono Shel Olam. You haven't really been doing it. I guess he's a very overzealous auditor. You know, so he starts, you know, beating up Yaakov Avinu until Yaakov Avinu says, okay, I'll pay. You know, fine, I'm good. I'll pay the IRS. I won't even call that number on the radio, you know, to try to see if they can get me out of it in some way. I'll pay. I'm good for it, 100%. Michael says, okay, he paid. Everything is good, Ribono Shel Olam. What's harder to understand, according to this pshat, and again, this pshat goes back to the Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer. I mean, we may just have heard of it right now, but in Midrashim, it's ancient. It goes back a very far time. So it's clear that the Malach keeps pummeling Yaakov Avinu, right? The next pasuk, of course, says, Vayar ki lo yachol lo, the Malach saw that he was unable to beat Yaakov Avinu, vayiga bekaf yirecho, he struck Yaakov Avinu on the thigh, vateka kaf yerech Yaakov ve'avko imo. And as they were fighting, so the thigh of Yaakov Avinu was knocked out of place a little bit. Of course, we know that's the whole story of the Gid Hanasha, you know, as described in the Chumash. So if it's the Sar Shel Esav who's fighting against Yaakov Avinu, I understand that the Sar Shel Esav is not going to give up until Yaakov Avinu is defeated. I mean, that's what he's trying to do. The Sar Shel Esav is trying to defeat Yaakov Avinu. So, you know, he can't totally knock him out, but at least I can give him an injury. Okay, good, Baruch Hashem. But if this Malach is sent from the Ribono Shel Olam as an auditor, you know, as someone to demand from Yaakov Avinu, make good on your pledge, so then once Yaakov Avinu makes good on his pledge, so the Malach should leave. Now, what do we think happened? Like, the whole night? I mean, it sounds like they were fighting for a long period of time. What, Yaakov Avinu is like one of these guys who never makes good on his pledge until, you know, they're beating him and beating him. That's inconceivable. Presumably, as soon as Yaakov Avinu was made aware of the fact that this was demanded from him, we can only assume that he didn't have to be beaten up, you know, to do this. He was, I'm sure he was willing, you know, at a moment, once he understood, you know, he was willing to do this. So then how come the fight didn't stop? How come the Malach didn't let Yaakov go at that point? Right? Okay, mission accomplished. We got it out of him. Okay, you know, boss, beat me up. You know, I'm done already. So, L'chora, I would think that maybe the answer is as follows. I'm not 100% sure, but maybe the answer is as follows. You know, when a person doesn't make good on a vow, he needs to be punished. So even when Yaakov Avinu fulfills his vow, okay, so you beat me up, so now I'll give you Levi. Okay, leave me alone already. There's still enough of a complaint against Yaakov Avinu that the Malach keeps hitting him. Because, good, I'm glad that you did what you vowed, but you need to be punished for having, you know, for having not been quick enough to make good on the vow. And Yaakov Avinu ends up walking away from that encounter limping. The limp is a result of his having not made good on the vow that he made 20 years before. A promise is a promise. We don't take promises lightly. It comes out, if that's correct, again, I'm not sure it's correct, but I'm open to different interpretations, but I think you have to answer the question somehow. So it comes out that the whole institution of Gid Hanosha, right, which we know, the mitzvah of Gid Hanosha comes out from this whole encounter with the Malach. The message of Gid Hanosha is make good on your pledges. Make good on your pledges. Or, you know, Rachmana Litzlan, you're going to get beaten up as a result. You know, this is a good Dvar Torah to keep in your back pocket if you're ever making an appeal. But that's I think, what emerges from over here. This idea of Meiser and taking off Meiser and the importance of Meiser is so stressed in this parsha that it leads to another very, very interesting interpretation of the Yonason ben Uziel, again, one which, you know, is not obvious at all.
What's interesting is this is taking place when Yaakov is entering Eretz Yisrael.
Right. Right. So it's Yaakov's going to Eretz Yisrael, and now it's...
So now that, you're sure, now you have to give me my...
Right. Now you're back. Make good on your pledges. It's interesting. So Yaakov Avinu comes back into Eretz Yisrael, and he encounters Esav. Good, wonderful. Turns out okay. He comes to Shechem. He buys a portion of the land outside of Shechem, and then we have the following pasuk, very pasuk which lends itself to a lot of discussion. Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Chaf. Vayatzev Shom Mizbeach. Yaakov Avinu, outside of Shechem, the city of Shechem, sets up a Mizbeach, an altar. Vayikra lo Kel Elokei Yisrael. Right? Now, what these words mean are very ambiguous. The simple interpretations of this word, of these words, is he called it, Yaakov Avinu called the Mizbeach, Kel Elokei Yisrael. God, the God of Israel. That's the simple interpretation of the pasuk. The reason the simple interpretation of the pasuk is troublesome is because why would you call a mizbeach, an altar, God, the God of Israel? You know, I mean, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the God of Israel. He's non-corporeal. He doesn't have a body. He's not seen. You know, to build a mizbeach and say the mizbeach is called Kel Elokei Yisrael, God, the God of Israel, seems strange. And maybe even on some level, even a little bit blasphemous, you know, to refer to the Mizbeach as Kel Elokei Yisrael. So there are different ways to deal with this pasuk. We'll start with the Targum Unculus. The Targum Unculus writes, V'akem tamon madbecho, Yaakov Avinu set up a Mizbeach there, Uplach Alohi, he worshipped by the Mizbeach, Kodom Kel Elokei Yisrael, right, before God, the God of Israel. How does that fit back into the... So that clearly is... That's fine. In other words, Yaakov Avinu davened there. He worshipped there in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does that fit the words of the Pasuk? So apparently, you know, the Targum reads the pasuk Vayikra lo, not that Yaakov called it the Mizbeach by a certain name, but rather he called there in the name of Hashem. You know, Vayikra el Hashem, he called out to Hashem is an expression that means davening, that means turning to Hashem in tefillah. So Vayikra lo, so he called out there at that place to Kel Elokei Yisrael, to Hashem the God of Israel. You have to put in a couple of extra words that are not explicit in the Pasuk, but you can see where the Targum Onkelos relates back to the Pasuk. It's not describing the name of the Mizbeach, it's describing what Yaakov Avinu did. He davened to Hashem, you know, when he was there on the Mizbeach. So that's the Targum Onkelos. But what I think is very, very striking in terms of our previous discussion is the Yonasan ben Uziel over here. And he writes as follows. Va'akem tamon madbecha. So Yaakov Avinu sets up a Mizbeach there. V'tamon yahav maisra da'afrish min kol delay. And Yaakov Avinu there, on the place where he had set up the Mizbeach, set aside maiser, he set aside a tithe from everything that he had. Kodom kel Elokei Yisrael. Before Hashem, the God of Israel. So here we see the same idea again. Yaakov Avinu, again, strikingly, comes into Eretz Yisrael, buys a portion of land in Eretz Yisrael, right, by Shechem, sets up in the Mizbeach, and what does he do by the Mizbeach? He sets aside Maaser. Now already, in his mind, he already set aside Maaser from his children, again, which is more theoretical than anything else. Here, he sets aside actual Maaser, you know, in terms of taking off from his possessions and the like. What he does with the Maaser, it's not immediately clear. You know, maybe he donates it to the Yeshivas Eiver, or, you know, something of that nature. But, you know, obviously, he's still smarting from his encounter with the Malach. Maaser, 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 Maaser. You got to give Maaser. So good. So here he comes in Eretz Yisrael, and he's setting aside Maaser, almost the first thing that he does, you know, when he settles himself somewhere. Fine. How do you get that out of the pasuk? I mean, I understand that the Targum Onkelos says Vayikralo means he calls the name of Hashem, and that's what he's doing. He's building a mizbeach and davening to Hashem at that place. How do you see in the pasuk that he's setting aside Maaser? Where on earth do you get that out of the pasuk? So, if you learn the Mishnayos and the Gemaras that talk about separating Maaser, we find that there's a term used by Chazal, Kriyas Shem. Kriyas Shem, calling the name, you know, doesn't mean that you're naming a child. That's the way we usually use it today. But Kriyas Shem in the context of Maaseros means that you declare that such and such an amount of your possessions is Maaser, and then you separate it and put it aside. Right? So the necessary prerequisite for giving Maaser is Kriyas Shem of Maaser, is declaring, you know, this portion to be Maaser. How does that help us? Well, according to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, Vayikra lo, he called it, doesn't refer to tefillah, and it doesn't refer to naming the Mizbeach. Vayikra lo means he was Kare Shem on the Maaser. He declared this portion to be Maaser, which he would then set aside. So that's how we get Maaser out of the pasuk, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel. Again, it's a non-intuitive way of reading the words Vayikra lo, but here too, also we find this idea of Maaseros, you know, very, very associated with Yaakov Avinu, and again, particularly as he's coming back into Eretz Yisrael, that he has to focus on the Maaser. Yeah.
If he's setting aside his son as Maaser, so isn't he in effect getting twice?
But remember what he says, V'chol asher titein li, asher asrenu lach. Whatever you give me, I'm going to give Maaser from it. So from my children, from my, you know, from my money, from my my possessions, you know, you name it. Anything I get, I'm going to give Maaser to the Ribbono Shel Olam. One last interesting comment to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, which, again, I don't think we would intuitively think about. So shortly before Yaakov Avinu comes into that part of Eretz Yisrael, so when he's taking leave of Esav, it says, V'Yaakov nosa sukosa, v'yiven lo boyis. Yaakov traveled to Sukkos, right, the name of a place. He built a house there. Ulamikneu also Sukkos. For his cattle, he built Sukkos, he built huts. Alkein kara shem hamakom Sukkos. And that's why the name of the place was called Sukkos, right? Because he built these Sukkos, he built these huts for the for the cattle. Okay, so again, you read the pasuk. So he built a house. He had some tents in the back for his cattle. Great, nothing much to see over here. There's the Yonos ben Uziel writes as follows: V'Yakov natal sukkos v'Yisakav tamon treis ayarchei shata. Yaakov traveled to Sukkos, right, and he stayed there for 12 months. Uvenale bei midrasha. When it says in the pasuk Vayiven Laboyis, he built for himself a house. It's not just a place to live. He built for himself a beis medrash. Ubenale bei midrasha. Right? Very fascinating idea. Yaakov Avinu comes into Eretz Yisrael. First thing he does, he sets up a beis medrash. Right? It's along the lines of the more famous Maimer Chazal that Rashi brings, that Ves Yehuda Shalach Lufanov, El Yosef Lahoros Lufanov Goshna, as Klal Yisrael are going down to Mitzrayim. Yaakov Avinu says Yehuda ahead of him to go down to Mitzrayim and also to set up some kind of beis medrash when they go down to Mitzrayim. So here that same idea is expressed by the Targum Yonos ben Uziel. Vayiven Loboyis means that he made a beis medrash. How do we know that? How do we know that Vayiven Loboyis doesn't just mean he built a house, right? I mean, he needed a place to live, right? So some of the Mefarshim on the Targum Unkelus say, in those days people lived in tents. I mean, we see that he made for the, all throughout the stories of Yaakov Avinu is described his ohel, this ohel, the ohel of Rachel, the ohel of Leah. So to all of a sudden start talking about a bayis, a house, is a little bit out of character. It doesn't fit in with the fact that they lived in tents, probably elaborate tents, but, tents nonetheless. Chazal understand that he stayed here about a year and a half. Okay, so for a year and a half, if you're only going to stay somewhere a year and a half, to build a house seems a little, going overboard. Just make a nice tent and put it together. So obviously, bayis in this context must not just mean a place for him to live. It must mean a place of special significance, a beis medrash. So that's the Targum Yonos ben Uziel understands. We're talking over here about the building of a beis medrash, which was of paramount importance when he came into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Reb Chanan ben Akasha Omer Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es